This is professional radio, gentlemen.
That would and be it's front wheel drive.
Scotty, have you got anyone you want to thank?
Just myself.
And now we do the after hours.
Gentlemen, what would you go for?
Thanks to your sin, dude.
Okay, and because it's not a supercar.
But it is.
It's not.
Automotive perfection comes in the form of two letters, A and U.
Long live my LTD.
Welcome to Car Talk. It's Tuesday night here. It's me, Matty J, online with Scotty Doe Johnson and Mr. David Prince. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing well, thank you, mate.
Doing pretty good, thank you very much.
It's good. Good to see both of you. What's been happening in your worlds? We've had a busy kind of week and a bit, I think. There's been a lot going on, whether it be in the terms of the Formula One, whether it be in buying and selling cars. We'll get to that very, very shortly. But we'll start with you, Scotty. Updates with you, man. Hey, how's your week been first and foremost? And then what's happening on your end?
Happening on my end, I guess. Yeah, my week's been okay so far. Bit busy today, but that's all right. Just running around, getting things sorted and work around it, which can be tricky when you're a teacher. Updates, Skyline's still sitting there. Blade's still chopping away, doing its thing.
I see what you did there.
Very good, Scotty. Very good.
Yeah. Went to the Grand Prix on the weekend.
Oh, which day did you go?
Saturday.
Okay. Yeah.
How was it?
Went on the Saturday. Really good, as usual. Still busy, but it didn't seem super packed. I think they've spread out things a bit more. They've moved the cars that were on display. Used to be where we used to go, and they'd be pretty much right behind us, running on the fairway, because for people that don't know, it's on a golf course. And they've kind of moved it further along. There's just, it just seems a bit more open, more space for everyone. Obviously, there's some new grandstands that were put up last year. So there's more room for that. I guess that takes away a few more people too. Plenty on-track action. Same as last year, we had the Formula 3s out and the Formula 2s.
How was that?
Really, the Formula 3s, I swear, those drivers are crazy. Their cars are very loud. Formula 3s are really loud. I've got to find out what kind of engines they use, but they're a lot louder than the Formula 1s.
Yeah, they weren't very loud.
Yeah, Formula 1s, not that loud anymore. But these things are sliding around all over the place and great tight racing. A couple of safety cars had to come out. But it was really good to watch. Thoroughly enjoyed the Formula 2s as well. They're really, really nice. Good to watch. So if you want to see some up-and-comers moving to Formula 1s, like seriously, watch the Formula 3s and the Formula 2s. They're fabulous to watch.
Were you in a grandstand, Scotty, or did you get an admission ticket?
Just general admission. We rock up with our camp chairs, find a spot, sit it there, and that's nice. Touches your spot from then on.
Yeah.
So you can get up and walk around. Yeah, you can get up, walk around, come back.
There are plenty of good vistas, and with the way they've done the landscaping, there are some really good spots to get in general admission. And then the screens I thought this year were really good too, all around the track at different locations and sort of a hot, or like food courts almost in two or three places. But as you say, it's really spread out a lot more, but you walk and walk and walk and walk, which is which is part of the day you expect anyway. It covers a huge area.
There's
Park Lake.
General admission opens up a lot of space for you all around the track.
Yeah.
To find somewhere that you'll like.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you don't bring a chair along, you can just walk around the track and find different spots time, watch different cars if you like. You know, you don't need that one spot. We're kind of drawn to this one spot because it's got the TV screen. So you've got the commentators that talking, you've got the TV screen, so you can kind of keep up, especially when it comes to the qualifying, the Formula qualifying. So it kind of keeps up with that, which was terrific. Verstappen breaking a record. So Albert Park has a brand new lap record now, thanks to him.
Breaking the record and then breaking down. The following day.
The rear brake had locked up, and he wasn't happy because the technicians should have seen that.
Mm.
And they didn't mention it or say anything. And you saw the damage that it did if you saw it. Mm-hmm. Quite a lot of damage.
You'd hate to be that person right now, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, for not noticing that. Yeah.
Mm. One job. Or a 1,000 jobs.
But hats off to Carlos Sainz.
Yes. Yeah.
That long after an operation like that. And
2 weeks later.
Wow. So good on Ferrari.
I mean, let's be honest. His dad was nuts, and if that's any case, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So
that's right. The DNA is there, isn't it?
DNA is there. Like I've got a lot of respect for his old man because he was a rally driver, and you know how I feel about rally drivers. They're a special kind of breed. They're how would you explain it? Fearless. Insane. Yeah. Fearless, insane, all the above. Because like, as I've mentioned on the show before, Formula One, you make a mistake, you're in a gravel trap, you're out, but at least you're not hurt. On a World Rally special stage, one mistake tree, you know, like it's quite literally, you've got to be insane to do it. Like, and they're going through mountains and hills and, you know, on gravel at 200 k's plus an hour, they're next level, these people. So respect.
Yeah, so if you haven't been, I'd advise you to go and check it out. There's so much to do and see just around the track, especially if you've got kids and that, you know. They had the whole DC thing with Batman there, and
Wonder Woman was there,
and it was all around. So, you know, you got things like that. There's plenty to do. Get on it. Great day. Go any day. I prefer to go Saturday because you see more cars.
Mm.
And you get to see the Formula Ones twice.
Mm.
You practice and then qualifying.
There's a speed difference between Formula 2 and Formula 3 compared to Formula 1. Is it noticeably different on the track? Or from where you sit? Or is it much of a...
You notice it because... Where I am, they've come out around a corner and it's just kind of a smaller, not sharp or anything, just gradually goes around. It used to lead to an S-bend that was up a bit further with a gravel trap, but last year they got rid of all that. Right. And you'd notice that because you'd look down and you see where they brake at, and you can kind of watch where the V8 supercars used to brake, and that's miles away. And then you're watching the Formula Ones and it's like 50 meters. And then they break. It's crazy the difference. And you can tell by the speed with the Formula 3s and the Formula 2s, and you know exactly when the Formula 1s are on it with their lap. You know, plenty of sparks are flying on that straight. So that was really good. I guess some annoying news, but it turns out all right with the Subaru. So I took that one in for the roadworthy today. It didn't get one because of suspension bushes, mainly all the rear bushes by the looks of it.
Yes.
Some other couple of things that, you know, if I went back in, I just have to tidy it up.
Mm.
And it would pass, really. It was silly. But, yeah, it was just bushes, suspension bushes, and a little leak behind the rear muffler, which easy fix because they check all that rubbish too. Offered the guy a different price, and he said, yep. And he is coming to get it.
Well, there you go.
Tonight. So he's pretty keen. He's pretty keen to get back into the Subi life.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting a great car. I mean, I've seen that car a number of times, and it's as for one of those, you know, there are a lot of really ratty ones around now.
Mm-hmm.
But yours is a great looking example. And probably the rarest one that they did in that generation.
Yeah, the B4. That'll be it.
Yep. So no, he's got a good car, I think, and any car of that age. And you've had it, I think, 8 years. You said, didn't you?
Yeah, long time. Yep.
But it hasn't had a roadworthy in 8 years, so that's a long time for, you know, bushes to deteriorate and stuff like that. So it just draws a line in the sand, and think how much better it'll be when he gets that done. He'll be happy as.
Oh yeah, it'll feel nice. It'll be nice. The rear. I couldn't imagine how much better it would feel.
Mm.
I was driving it there today, I just couldn't imagine just how bad, like, the brakes are good on it, but just how bad the brakes feel compared to the blade. That I'm like, what the hell? There's so much pedal movement and it doesn't bite like it does in the blade. There's a reason why.
Yeah.
Considering the size of the brakes on the blade and how quick it pulls up, which got a bit of a workout the other day going to work. There was an SUV in front of me and then another smaller car, and it's a road where you do 100. And there was a car, the smaller car in front was going to turn right, and he's obviously, I don't know, not paying attention to the road. He slammed on the brakes and he's actually had to swerve.
Oh, yeah.
Off the road. And I braked and pulled up in time.
Yeah. You're able to cut your speed really quickly.
Sliced it.
I'd be surprised if you weren't able to do that, Scotty. But anyway.
So I pulled up well. The only thing I want to do is I want to find out if there's any way you can get a switch installed to turn off the annoying traction control on it.
I reckon it's been
and
done.
Not having to go through the step.
I reckon it's
there
been
is a button on the dash?
No button.
Yeah.
It's, you've got to do a whole combination of handbrake, brake, pressings and stuff like that to turn it off, which I've done once before to see if it works, and it works.
Mm.
But it's just sometimes you want to quickly accelerate, and as soon as it gets loss of traction, it still lets you go and it will rev out, but it cuts all the torque.
Mm-hmm.
So unlike old traction controls where it bogs down, you don't go anywhere, it'll still rev out, but it revs out like you've got no torque, like you've got no power. So it does that. You're like, what? I'm not really going anywhere. This has got more power than this. What the hell?
Yeah.
And you see the light flashing. You're like, ah. So that's annoying. I'm sure they would fix if I had better tires, but that's too expensive.
I think you'll be right, Scotty. It'll all work out.
And yeah, I think that's it. Oh, yeah, I got another one to add to my collection of the Grand Prix.
Oh, nice.
Collectors. Cool. Magazine I get every year, so it's another one to add.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's stayed.
Do you have one from 2020?
That was the year when no, I wish I did, because I did go on the Thursday with some students, and I wish I got one then. Been good, but I didn't.
I got given a hat the other day from 2020.
Oh, did you?
There's a guy at the at one of those trash and treasure markets not far from where we are.
Yeah.
And he's got all this old stock, you know, T-shirts, hats and all that, all brand new and all endorsed, but all 2020. So, I don't know. Obviously someone, you know, hung around all these years, and obviously someone said, get rid of all that rubbish, you know. And it's probably been grabbed out of a skip or something, but yeah. I gave one to a mate for his birthday the other day, and he was rapt because he's a conspiracy theorist, and he just thought it was fantastic to have a 2020 Grand Prix hat, the Grand Prix that never happened.
Yeah, because I was ready to go on the Saturday. So I was like, well, I was there with the kids, and I thought, no, I'll just grab it on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And no.
Didn't happen.
Everyone knows yeah, load of rubbish.
Mm.
That's me done.
David Prince.
I went to the Grand Prix on Friday. I actually got rung about 9 o'clock and offered a tickets in the morning. So I was able to juggle a few things around with work and headed in for a few hours, which was great. Unexpected, because I didn't think I'd get there this year. I'd taken the Wednesday off for reasons which we'll go into a little bit later. But it took the Friday off too. So, you know, I felt like I'm a part-time employee in my own business. But I caught up with my nephew and his lovely wife and their two gorgeous girls, who was their youngest daughter's first trip to the Grand Prix. Gregor's a keen listener to the podcast. So,
how you doing?
Brilliant catching up with you, Gregor, and the girls. We were laughing because they had the headphones already, the Greek cars, and yeah, the girls took them off, you know, like they weren't even scary loud. They were They were louder than they were that, must be about 5 years ago now when they changed the rule, 6 years ago or something. And they basically couldn't hear them. It was terrible. So a bit more than that, but the classics had been on the track just before the first qualifying round and or the first practice round, and they were 10 times louder than the Formula One cars. Mm. So, but yeah, I thought it was a great spectacle. I was amazed how many people there were on the Friday. I've been a few times on the Friday, and it's sort of the day where the crowds are right down, but not this time. And as has been borne out by the news, they're actually pushing now to make it the biggest Grand Prix in the world.
Really?
It's second to Silverstone, admittedly.
Really?
Yeah. So, and it was only pipped, I think, the figures, I can't remember them specifically, but we're only 20 or 30,000 behind Silverstone.
Wow.
So they're hoping to change that next year and make it, even put more attractions on for people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right, Scotty. You know, it was great with kids. That kids area had a Ferris wheel and some rides and stuff like that, and a great covered area. You know, lots of food trucks around, and as well as the characters walking around, Wonder Woman and seagulls. That are guys dressed up as seagulls who'd come and pitch your chips. That was cool.
Did you see the people dressed up as like a bush?
No.
They're like
camouflage. I probably didn't notice them.
They're just dressed up as like a bush, and they're walking around everywhere.
Didn't see
that. I don't know why. I don't know what it was promoting, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, and then the flyovers that they do and stuff like that. So it's
cool.
It's a spectacle. Yeah. So that was Friday, and then we watched it. The car club had went to a sports bar on Sunday afternoon and watched it live, and Melbourne looks amazing. The footage, the drone footage and stuff of the track, and with Melbourne in the background, and the day was just perfect. I mean, it was clear blue skies, and you'd want to come to Melbourne if you were sitting somewhere on the other side of the world and freezing and thinking,
fantastic.
One day I'm going to go to Melbourne. So I think it fulfills that need really well. While I was at the track on Friday, I was on the way actually, and I got an email from a guy that I've used before, who I used to bring the red N1 in from Japan about 3 years ago. Because as I've mentioned, I was placing that one on the market, and I'm looking for a newer model, and one had popped up. So as is the case with when you're buying at auction in Japan, you don't get a lot of notice. So by the time I left the Grand Prix track, I owned a new N1. Another N1, not a new one. It's a 2020. So the way the process works is he knew what I was interested in, knew roughly what my budget was, and I'd been keeping a bit of an eye on the auction as well. Nothing had come up, and then this one did come up. On Friday morning, I hadn't seen it. He rang me about it, he's got a guy on the ground up there that went out and took about 40-50 photos of it underneath every inch of it and the like. They have access to a lot more history. It was a one owner car. It's got some mods to it, which I wasn't expecting, but they're all being done pretty tastefully.
Yeah.
It's got a very nice set of Vox Racing wheels on it. It's got some spoon suspension. It's got
and that's Spoon, the brand. That they're not made of spoons, just for our, for our...
They play the spoons as you are. a pod filter and those sorts of things. So all stuff that's easily reversible. The condition of the car was 4.5B, I think, which is pretty good. And in the photos, there's really not a blemish on the car. So, so then he rang me back and said, "What do you think of the photos?" I said, "It looks pretty great." We decided what we'd go to. And within about an hour, I had an email back saying, "Congratulations, we've secured the vehicle."
Hey. So,
that's pretty exciting.
Well, first of all, David, welcome to the three-cylinder turbo manual club.
I'm a card-carrying member now. That's brilliant.
You are absolutely a card-carrying member. You will and truly deserve to be part of this illustrious club. there's quite literally not many of us.
There's not a lot of people in the internet, is there?
No, definitely not. No. But
looking
they
forward
are.
To it.
Absolutely, you should be. It's a and you got the right color, and good things come to people who wait. And I know you're looking at the yellow one, but it wasn't the color for you. And the color you wanted, the color you wanted was the orange one. So I'm glad you've waited and you've got the one you've wanted.
Yeah, so one of the cool things that occurred to me recently is that the color's called Sunset Orange, and that was actually back in the 70s when the EB Civics first came out. They bought about 74. They released 72 in Japan. About 74, we never got it here, but they released an RS version of the EB1 Civic. Mm-hmm. That had twin carbs and a 5-speed gearbox and a few extra little bits and pieces, taco, that sort of thing. And the RS didn't stand for Rally Sport or Rev Special or anything. It actually stands for Road Sailing. So the fact that the N1 in a manual is the same color as the original EB RSs is pretty cool. I like that little link back to the history of the color and the badge. Mm. So that'll be good. So next thing, of course, you got to organize to get it here. So the first step in the process was actually paying for it. So I get an invoice from a company in Japan. It's got a whole lot of details about the VIN number of the car, the mileage. So it's a 2020. It's done 32,095 Ks. The paint, the color's orange. The paint code's YR585A for those playing at home. So it's got the price that I paid. Then it's got the bank details to actually make a international bank transfer. Ben from JSpec, who I'm using to bring the car in, he's got an arrangement with a currency forwarding company called OFX. Very simple process, just a link. You actually have a SWIFT code for the bank, which is like an international transfer code. Mm-hmm. Put all the details in, put the money, and they transfer it to Australian dollars, and then you pay in Australian dollars. Cool. They transfer the money in yen to the bank in Japan. Done. And very straightforward, simple process. So now it's paid for. I got an email today to say the next step, we've actually got to apply for the import approval for the car, which is very straightforward. He's put me in touch with a compliance workshop in Sydney that's got a very good price and he's dealt with numerous times. They'll actually comply the car in Sydney and then transfer it down to their agent in Melbourne, who can, if I want them to register it, they'll register it, or I can arrange to do the registration myself. So, it's changed a little bit since last time. I actually have to go onto the Department of Infrastructure and create an account, and then basically this compliance workshop works as my agent to bring that car into the country.
So do they just go over it and make sure it suits ADRs? Is that what they do? Or
that's right. Yeah. So the cars, because I bought the red car I bought in the 2013 was the first N1 in Australia, and that was the test vehicle. So that car had to go through a whole process of actually being just ensuring that that car actually complied with all the relevant ADRs. And as far as I know, it sailed through and didn't need anything done to it at all. So I'm presuming this one will be the same. Not expecting any surprises. He's already checked the modifications the car's got as far as the compliance workshop are concerned. There's no problems. The only thing is they might it does have wheel spacers on it to push the wheels out a bit, so they have to come off. Obviously they're not legal here. But I'll probably put different wheels on it anyway, and might even sell the. I'll see how the car drives basically with them once they're back on. But I do have a set of nice black racing Watanabe alloys as well that I had on the red car, so they look very nice on the orange car too. They're in black, so yeah, so that's pretty exciting. But I'm not expecting to see it for 3 months or so. So I'll keep you posted. You'll get really bored with my car updates each week. Yeah. Nothing's happened. But the exciting thing, Maddie, is that it's actually being shipped out of Nagoya. So it might go to the Lego, might go to Legoland on the way.
On the way. Yeah, we should go back to Japan to Legoland and just watch it hop on the ship. That'd be
cool. Just camp at the Legoland hotel there and just kick it. That was one of the cool things we did. One of the surprising things we did on the trip to Japan, we actually went to Legoland. But the fascinating thing to us, when we all piled back in the taxi to go back to the station, we drove through acres and acres and acres of cars sitting in paddocks waiting to go on ships to be exported to all parts of the world. But I don't sit there for long. I mean, it's a bit of a machine. It's a very efficient operation. And once you have a place, you know, a shipping place, they go and find that car and boom, it's on the boat and off. But there were thousands of cars, weren't there, Matty?
Oh, it just didn't end. Like, it was just rows of cars. I'm like, my goodness.
Nagoya is one of the major ports for Tokyo. So it was pretty cool.
So, David, just want to ask, has that been deregistered in Japan? Like it's the first thing you do. Okay, it's going to Australia, so we're going to deregister it in Japan so it's no longer a Japanese car.
So the price I paid includes that. So some listeners might, if they're looking at cars in Japan, might see a price followed by FOB, and that stands for freight on board. So the price that you actually pay includes the deregistration of the vehicle and includes it actually being transferred to the port ready for shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also a cleaning,
quarantine,
pressure cleaning sort of thing underneath and stuff like that. So FOB stands for freight on board, and the car will be ready when it's ready to be shipped. Yeah, I've already paid for what needs to be done to actually get it on the boat.
No, that's awesome. That's so exciting. I actually can't wait to. I know you'd be like, I can't wait to drive it. I'm like, I can't wait to drive it. I'm super excited.
Take a number, Maddie.
I know.
Yeah, take a number.
It's all right. I'll
take number two.
Yeah. I'll swap you the Fiesta for a day, and then I'll enjoy the little Honda Rift.
Do a little cheeky run up Mount Dandenong on one evening.
That would be a lot of fun. That'd be awesome. No, I'm so happy for. I'm so glad you waited for the right car, because like I said to you, I'm like, it'll come. It'll come again. It'll come again. It'll come
oh,
again.
I knew it was. It was just a matter of time. And the stars aligned. It was just funny. It was Grand Prix day, and by the time I walked into Grand Prix, I had no idea. But by the time I walked in, I had one.
Had a car.
It worked really well.
But that wasn't the only Grand Prix related shenanigans you got up to, Mr. Prince, was it?
Well, no, I thought that was your update.
Oh, well, it's courtesy of you, Mr. Prince.
One of the good things I did do last week, one of my highlights, was actually getting a 40-year-old AH Civic hatchback into a reel for Honda Australia for their current lineup. So I see that as quite a bit of a victory.
I said to you, I'm like, that car is going to be front and center. And sure enough, it was front and center. And then it got into it. But basically, you said, look, if you're free on a Wednesday, after school, obviously.
Oh, yes.
It was a possibility to meet some people from, Honda, F1, etc. So I had the chance to drive Mr. David Day's Honda Civic Type R EP3, which is the bread van Type R, the one that gets all the love, and rightly so. It's a very cool car, high revving, 6-speed manual. So I went there early and picked it up from Mr. David Day, and he gave me the rundown of how to use the immobilizer and all the bits and bobs. And I was like, yep, that's like my MR2, very easy. Press the button, off you go. First of all, so I'll say that bit. It was actually quite interesting to drive. It's firm, but that you'd expect that. I think it's got a tune on it because it's definitely not stock. It pops and bangs when you're up in the VTEC and you change gear, just bang, bang, bang. Like it's like something shooting at the exhaust. I thought something was wrong with the car the first time I did. I'm like, what is that? Like, is my seat loose? Because it felt like it was just happening right underneath my seat. I have so much power. But no, it's got a lot of power. It's actually a very, very quick car. It's not as slow as I because I remember going in one years ago, but not driving it, but there was like four or five of us piled into this little Civic Type R, and it didn't really move. And my mate's like, I swear it goes faster than this. It goes faster than this. I'm like, yeah, okay. It was quite quick. It's definitely got a tune on it, that's for sure. It's been mapped in some way. That was cool because they wanted some older cars there at a car wash. But before that, I met up with David Prince and had a drive of some other special cars. I drove a early Z, which is that purple Z that we've discussed on the show many times, and their little air cooled Z. That was delightful. That was beautiful to drive. It complete. To be fair, chalk and cheese to my Scamp in terms of just how it drives. Like except the rear end. The rear end felt exactly the same. The jumpy leaf springs, but the gearbox. Oh, a synchromesh makes a difference, doesn't it, Mr. Prince?
It makes a difference.
It felt like a modern car. It was a lot. It's a lot easier to drive than the Scamp in that instance, but. It did feel a little bit different to the Scamp. The steering was a bit different. It's got a taco, and it's weird seeing a taco rev to like 10,000 RPM, which is quite funny. So that was fun. That was a pleasure. And then I also had the pleasure of driving the car David took to the day, which was the 1982 or 84, David?
86.
86, sorry, 86. I keep saying 82 for 80 for some reason. 86 Grand Prix Edition Civic, with the decal on the side. And that was, I couldn't get a smile on my face for a couple of reasons. The first reason, it's all you need. It's all the car you need. It's basic, but, you don't need flashy things and stuff. It's a car. It works. It's got a heater. It's got aircon. It does everything you need it to do. And I'm just like, this is what motoring is kind of all about, but getting you there, without any hassle. It starts up, sounded great, goes good. I was just like, this is all the car anyone could ever want. Obviously, there's no safety features, but it's got a seatbelt.
It's got a seatbelt. Come on.
in terms of I can see why they were so popular and why Civics have done so well for such a long time. It was brilliant. It was genuinely I'd say probably out of all the three cars we drove on the day, that one was the highlight. The gearbox was just delightful. And it just felt so light and on its toes, the whole time. It felt like it was so eager, and I loved it. I thought it was I thought that was definitely my highlight car of the day. So then you and I got a sandwich for lunch. Well, I got a sandwich. I can't remember what you got, David. You got something else, but I think it was a bagel. I think it was a bagel. Yeah, and then we went down to the car wash in Maribyrnong, where met in, I'm just putting inverted commas, the quickest 10 minutes of my life.
Right. It was like a military operation, wasn't it?
But it was Danny Rick and Ed Cavalli. So coming in a brand new CRV, and they got to meet Malcolm's son, who had the yellow Integra there, and they got photos. And I was just seeing the smile on his face, it looked like he couldn't move. He was just I can't believe I've just shook hands with Daniel Ricciardo. So that was really, really cool. But yeah, it was big operation security guards driving these big blacked out Kia Sportages, and there was three or four CRVs and cameras.
It's funny, if you had to look up in the dictionary, security guard, that's the guys that were there were what the photo would be, weren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
like machines. Yep. And black sunglasses around the head. Mm-hmm. Dressed all in black, big gold jewel, gold watch, and a gold necklace, thing around their neck and stuff. It was very funny.
Yep, it was. I was just like, well, that's interesting that he's got such high end security, but I thought that was quite funny. But it's camera crews, there were sound crews, and all sorts of stuff, and it just happened all of a sudden, and then all of a sudden it was over, and I was like, okay, that was that was that.
But they had access to – it had been going on for about 10 days. I'd been contacted by Honda Australia, and they said, look, we've got this – we want to produce some content for our social media stuff over the race weekend. We're wondering if you can get us some old Hondas. We've got a very important guest who's who's right into those 90s Honda Type R's. I said, all right, okay. And I looked at the data. I said, well, obviously it's a Formula One drive. And they said, well, we can't confirm that. it was pretty straightforward what was going on. It was one of they were struggling with, it all had to be cleared with the FIA and So they meet in another time zone overnight. So they were each day the goalposts were moving a little bit, and up until Monday, I didn't actually have a location or a time or anything sort of particular. So it was all sort of thrown together at the last minute. But it all worked out. It was fun to be involved in, get something out of the everyday, really.
Absolutely.
And yeah, he liked seeing the old cars and the older cars. Well, old cars, they're 20 years old now. 40 in the case of the Civic, so the Grand Prix edition. So that was good.
That's the real star of the show. I'm not going to lie, it's the real star of the show.
And the cool thing was he was really pleasant. And even the girls from Honda that I was talking to during the shoot said he's very different to some other Formula One race drivers they've had to entertain over previous years, where they might be European drivers and they might really be wanting to be there and not that interested in actually doing the publicity. Mm-hmm. And could be a bit of hard work. But they said Daniel was completely the opposite. So he was happy to be there and interested and chatty and everything. So that was nice. I mean, home ground advantage, he was probably felt comfortable being in Australia rather than being, you know, somewhere completely foreign to him. But no, it was a good week. It was a big week with cars and races and stuff.
Yeah, it definitely was. But it was pretty cool to be standing quite literally 2 feet away from the guy. That was pretty awesome. And you know, he seems like he's, from all other accounts, he seems like he's a really cool dude. So thanks, David, for you know helping organize it on your end and getting me involved. It was something I'll never forget. And I know Malcolm's son will never forget it either. Callum, yeah, that's it. So he'll have something to remember for the rest of his life. But yeah, it was a really, really cool day. So I just wanted to thank you on the show for that. That was pretty awesome.
Very welcome.
In terms of my other updates, I drove the MR2 today because one of my students, well, not my students this year, but he's a year 12 this year, and he's photographing cars and he wants to do like 90s and 80s cars and he asked me, he's like, sir, I know you've got an old MR2. could you possibly bring it to school and park it in this spot so we can take photos of it? I'll get my people to speak to your people and we'll have it arranged. But I brought it in for him today and he was wrapped and he took some really, really lovely shots. So keen to see how they come in after post. So I drove that today. That was good to get that out. Laser got serviced, and I think that's been pretty much it on my end, gentlemen. But yeah, David, excited for your new car. So you've got a new car; it's on its way. Scotty Doe's got a new car; it's in his garage, and you know it's all happening. It is all happening.
Have you got a new car, Matty?
I wish I could share some news, but no, I don't have a new car, David Prince. I think if I bring another car home, I will be shot. So I'm probably not going to do that for a very long time. So, but I'm happy with my selection of five. I think they all fit my bill really well. But I did say if I ever wanted to get something again, I'd probably buy a ute. Because, you know, to have something practical and ute life is a. It wouldn't be a dual cab ute. That's for sure. It'd be a Falcon ute or a Commodore ute or something along those lines. As we mentioned last week. But anyway, moving on to tonight's topic, gentlemen. Now, I set you guys a task of getting 3 cars for under $30,000 to do all your things. And then they have to be currently for sale now. And we can share them and we can discuss them. I'm happy to start, gentlemen, and explain my reasoning why. I will begin my list of cars. Now, I want a daily, but I want something that's quite new and still under warranty and reliable, but also fun to drive. And gentlemen, I want to introduce you to the 2019 Kia Picanto GT. That is my first car of the it's actually the most expensive car out of the list. So this one's currently for sale. It's in Victoria. It's a manual. It's 15,500. It's got 78,000 Ks, but fun little daily driver, 3-cylinder, you know, little manual.
Nice.
I'd get rid of the snowflakes off the back because I don't know why they're there, but you know, fun little car. Scotty, you like driving the other one you drove the other day, and it, it'll be part of it, it'll be part of the three-cylinder turbo group again.
It would, yes.
So I can add it to my list. But again, this is taking into account that I don't own a car. For some reason, the fuel flap's open there. I don't know why. In the photo, but it looks really, really tidy. And you know, it there. And again, after driving your car, David, it's all a car I could ever need. Really, it's got aircon, it's got heating. Obviously, it's got, you know, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, which is kind of a necessity these days. But you know, it's pretty back to basics. There's no heated seats. There's no, you know, massive sunroofs or anything. It's just a very basic car, but does everything you need to do for what you need to do, and still under warranty. So that would be my first car, gentlemen. I also then said, well, I'd like it to have a car that I could, you know, you do a bit more difference thing, like, you know, have a bit of a difference with. So 15.5 gives me, you know, 14.5 to play with. And I said, I haven't had one of these before, and I'm not really into four-wheel driving, but not only is it any 1998 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado, it is a World Cup RV6 in a manual. So from what I read, it was a one-owner car. Looks really quite tidy, and like, they're very hard wearing, these cars. Not great photos, but description is as follows. Let me just get to it. So it's got 400,000 kilometers on it, which is okay. It's a Toyota. It'll be all right. But yeah, been in the family for 20 years, regularly serviced, you know, and it's an 8-seater Prado as well. And obviously I wouldn't be driving this every day, so fuel was not going to be really an issue until I really drive it. It's club plateable, so that'd be my club car that I'd use to drive around in and on the weekends, or if I want to go four-wheel driving, or if I want to tow anything, or I want to put stuff in the back of it. They are a pretty good thing. So that's 5,200. So that gives me 5,200 plus 15.5 gives me, lost count, 20,700. I'm not a math teacher. Okay. That takes me a while. So then I was like, I need a luxury car for when I want to go out and have a nice night out. And I've always loved these, first generation IS 300, and that's $8,575 dollar-y-dos. 2JZ, straight six, 5-speed auto, just a comfortable car to take to partner out to, you know, to go to the shops or go out for a nice dinner. The dash doesn't look as bad as I've seen some of them. Some of them are all, you know, peeled and ratty, but this one's not too bad. It actually looks in quite tidy condition. This one's a one-owner car from what I read. It's a one-owner car, one-lady owner, service at Melbourne City Lexus. 280,000 Ks, but that doesn't bother me because it's a Toyota. It's got all the nice little things. These are little things to fix it up for work, but for a roadie. But that is my three cars to do everything. So I got my luxury car for the weekends and to go away, and got my Land Cruiser Prado to do the roughy tufty stuff, but also be, you know, chuck things in and use as a club car. And I've got my daily driver, which will use no fuel at all and be reliable and under warranty, my Kia Picanto GT manual. Gentlemen, what do you think of my collection of cars?
I think you win.
I win. I do like the daily you chose. That was very nice. And you're still able to score yourself a couple more.
Absolutely. I mean, I could swap between that and the Lexus, you know, to daily, because, you know, if I'm not being bothered driving a manual, I'll be just like, I'll hop in the Lexus. But I think for a daily little nugget, you know, 3-cylinder turbo and manual and in that club, it's a Mini Fiesta ST. So I will happily take my three. So yeah, it came in well under budget. Well, not well under, but by about $2,000. So yeah, that is my three. Scotty, would you like to show yours next? You can share your screen.
Yeah, I can go next. Oh, there it is. It's in green saying share screen. Do, do, do.
Oh, of course you did.
Is that sharing?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely, it is.
Okay, well, we'll start with this one. Anyway, we'll start with my cheapest car. It is a 2001 Ford Falcon SR Forte, the AU, Series 2. It's only got 202,500 kilometers on it.
That's barely run in, Scotty, for one of those.
Nice and low. it's only $5,000, and I thought this would be something that I can just smash about in because, you know, old car.
Actually, Scotty, it looks super tidy.
It does look pretty clean. Could have done a bit better on the photos because every single one on the interior is blurry, but
it's been shot with a potato, but that's okay. But the exterior, like usually these are all hammered, but that is a really clean example.
Yeah.
It's an SR, yeah.
It's still got the bonnet protector on it. So it just reminds me, you know, my parents had one of these in blue.
Nice.
So it brings back some memories there.
So the SR got you alloys and a spoiler. And you know that was pretty much it. But it's a Series 2, so no waterfall grill. So these are the update. Nicer grill. Yeah, I think that's a cracking first car. So is that going to be your daily runabout? Kind of just put the K's on.
Yeah, kind of. And then if I decide that drifting is my kind of thing, I could take up drifting and join the rest of the AU gang. Because then I've gone for a bit of a step up. And that's Lexus.
Yes.
And you can pick up these at a pretty good price now. So this one's at 15.5. It's a 2011 Lexus IS350. And it's the F Sport. So you got the F Sport suspension and some other bits and pieces in there too. These same engine that's in the blade.
Mm-hmm.
UGR FE. And these ones are geared really well. They're pretty darn quick.
That's a lot of car for the money, isn't it? Like 15.5. That is a lot of car.
Absolutely.
Oh, like, and
very reliable
too. I love the color.
That's what I was drawn to. It's a really nice blue.
That's my favorite color that they come in. Especially that color on the ISF. Oh,
yep.
Just magic. But that's as close as to an ISF as you're going to get without the big money. But that's a cracker.
So I've gone, so that's my route there. That would probably be more like my daily, and when I feel like having a bit of fun and take it for a bit of a squirt here and there, and when I want to show off a bit with a nice blue color.
How many cases on that?
And then my third one, I think it was pretty high. Oh, 231.
No, it's nothing. It's a 2GR.
That's all right on a 2GR. It'll keep going.
As I step at the AU, yeah. it's barely running.
And then I thought, you know what, I need. exactly. And then I thought I need kind of a project car. Skyline's a bit pricey now. You know, you're looking at $8,000 or more, and my budget is only from memory was about 5,800 left. So, what I've gone with.
Oh, yes.
It's a bit more I had with my budget, right?
Oh,
yeah. With what's left over, I could have got an R31. I thought, no, I'll go something different. We were talking about this, I think, it was last week.
Last week, yeah.
So it's a Proton Jumbuck. It's already manual and everything like that. So I'd slowly do that on the side and just buy the bits on.
So Evo 3 conversion, Scotty.
Correct. Yep, that's what I'd be looking at.
I can't believe how expensive they are.
I know. It's what I thought.
Jeez.
That's not one. There's only one.
He knows what he's got.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. I actually like a Jumbuck. I've always had a soft spot for a Jumbuck because all the people used to laugh at them. Oh, you know, you can't use a Jumbuck. What's the point of a Jumbuck? And I think it's a very. I think they're more practical than a bloody dual cab ute. So there you go.
They are now, aren't they? Yeah.
They are. Yeah. Stick that up your Ranger and Hilux backsides. Mr. David Prince. So just for a recap, I had the Picanto GT daily, Prado as a 4B club car, and the IS300 to take out, you know, for a nice dinner. Scotty had also an IS, but he had the later second gen 350 F Sport, plenty of power. AU Falcon to do the driftings, and project car for an Evo 3 conversion, the Proton Jumbuck. David Prince.
But I found a lovely 06 Honda Accord Euro manual as your just everyday simple car. It's done 180Ks and it's $7,500.
So that's a good car for that, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's It's in that really nice blue too, similar to the ISF that the Lexus that Scotty just showed. So that'd be really nice. I thought of a Type R, but a Type R Euro, which there are a few filtering in them, but they're sort of high teens, low 20s now. So that probably makes things a bit tricky. As far as getting the three, I think I've hung out a bit too much with Mr. Bunting, because I do actually see the merit in a nice Pajero. That'll tow anything. Seat seven, it's pretty much indestructible. So there's a very nice early car, 91 Super Wagon NG, the square blocky one.
Yeah.
With only 120,000 Ks on the clock, a manual. That's 15. So that takes it up again. So we're up at about 20. What's that, about 22 and a half,
yeah.
And just a bit of nostalgia, I found two nice manual Volkswagen EOSes again. I'd have to keep the roof down on them because they're that much older than the last one I had that never gave me any roof trouble. So I can't imagine that I'd be that lucky again. So you'd want to make sure that it actually it had a working roof, or you just got it down and left it down and put a cover over it when you kept it in the back corner of your garage and took it out on sunny days.
Yeah.
But there's some quite affordable ones of those. There's a lovely one that I looked at that was 12 grand, but with 110,000 Ks, silver with the red interior, listed as a manual, but in the photos you can quite clearly see it's an automatic. So I won't be going down the DSG road again. So it would need to be a six-speed manual, thanks very much.
Yeah, because yours was a six-speed manual, wasn't it, David?
It was, yes. Yeah. Yes.
The manuals are actually quite good in those. They're actually not a bad gearbox to use.
It was great. It was fantastic. Never gave me a minute's trouble.
I never got to see your EOS, but everyone that's owned an EOS either loved it or they had a dual clutch one and they hated it because of that reason. So it's that kind of comparison. But yeah, you've always spoken highly of your EOS, and I think if you had it, put the roof down, keep it in your garage, only bring it out on sunny days when you know it's definitely not going to rain. Sorted.
Yeah, the roof's not an issue if that's the case. It doesn't go up, but it's not an issue.
Well, if it's not, you know, there, it doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned.
That's right.
There's never been a roof on this car. What are you talking about? So
what are you talking about? The cool thing about those cars, as we've discussed before, is that the fact that it's got the glass section above the seats opens like a sunroof, pops up like a sunroof, so you get that full ventilation effect of a normal sunroof. Then it opens like a sunroof, so you can actually have that bit slid back.
I did not know
and
that.
Then you keep pressing the button and then the whole thing goes down into the boot and you've still got a boot space. They're interesting in that they're one of the few convertibles that's been sold in petrol and diesel and manual and auto. I mean, Mr. Bunting, again, if he was here, would say that you could order them that way through BMW. But yeah, there are as many diesels. And when I was searching for it, you know, you'd search by... there might be 100 for sale in Australia. Then you'd go to manual and there'd be 10.
Mm.
And then you'd go petrol rather than diesel and there'd be 4. So, you know, they were pretty rare, you know, basically 4%, you know, around the 4% mark in a manual. So
did you buy yours new? Manual.
Sorry?
Did you buy yours new?
No. It had I think I paid 15 for it. It had a very good history from Campbell Volkswagen, who were one of my dealerships. So I went in and they called it up for me. Well, actually, I probably shouldn't say that, but they advised me that the car had been very well looked after and didn't have any sort of advisories carried over. Whatever needed doing to it was done. And it was faultless in the 3 years I had it. It was great.
So you've got your EOS, your Euro Daily, and your
Pajero.
Pajero club car that you can enjoy on the weekends. I like it. Very, very good selection of cars, General. I love playing this game because, like, I always think of what could you get for the money, and you know, like, you always need a daily, and I think what makes the game super hard is that you need a daily,
That's something you want to drive on and enjoy and use. And I like your reasoning for all your dailies. So Scotty, your IS, great choice. You know, comfortable car, you know, be reliable to work. David Prince, Cord Euro, exactly what I just said about Scotty's car. And I went with something that's in warranty, bit of fun. So yeah, all really, really good. Is there anything that you would have changed in any of our lists, gentlemen? Would you have said, oh, I don't know how I feel about that car?
No, I reckon you guys nailed it. I think you've given it far more thought than I had too.
Yeah, I do like how, Maddie, you've gone with the Picanto, because it does have the warranty and everything. There's some exactly. Good thinking. And it'll be a great little car, and you can easily drive it into the city and park wherever.
Because like the GTs, the actual GT is quite rare. Like the GT line is there everywhere.
That's right.
The actual GT is quite rare. And they're actually they're cracking to drive. And like, even in the base one, which you drove, Scotty, which the auto wasn't great, but the to drive was fun. So
yeah, well,
so if I can have that on a daily basis, absolutely. Gentlemen, I think it's time for the quiz.
Ahoy.
Quiz.
So 10 questions plus some bonus questions. You know the rules. You know how it works. Let's crack on, gentlemen. Question one. The Peugeot 306 GTI 6 had the number 6 in its name for what reason?
David. Was it a 6-speed manual?
It was a 6-speed manual. Well done, David. There was a... People get a misconfusion. Oh, has it got a 6-cylinder? No, it's got a 6-speed manual. So it was very early 6-speed.
Yeah, very early adopter of a 6-speed, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. A cool car, actually. 170 horsepower. Like they were probably the last of the good Peugeot hot hatches back of the day. Question two. The Holden Calibra, its red top 16-valve 4-cylinder engine, which is quite sought after in the used aftermarket today for its durability and performance. Where was this engine actually made?
Scott. Is it UK?
Incorrect.
I'll have a go. Was it Fisherman's Bend?
Yeah, Port Melbourne. What? Yeah, it was made.
Really?
Yep. So, bonus question. After being built here in Australia and put together, it was shipped to another part of the world to be put in its cars. What country was it shipped to directly from Australia?
Oh, it was something weird. No, it's not something weird. That's a bit harsh. I'll have a guess.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Belgium?
Incorrect. It goes to Belgium later, but...
Okay.
Gosh, gets around.
It's a European country, but it's... No, it was Germany. Got sent to Germany, and then it was put in different cars and sent across and kind of used in different things. Question three. What is the last surviving car on sale in 2024 with a 5-cylinder engine?
Ooh.
It's only one car with it left.
Wow.
The other car that was in its stable is no longer for sale. Come on, Scotty. I know you can do this one.
No, I'm racking my brain hard. Oh, gosh, he's still got the 5-cylinder. Is it Volvo?
Incorrect. Good guess, but incorrect. They stopped doing a 5-cylinder a few years ago. There is still one company doing a 5-cylinder. David Prince.
Guess that. It's probably not right because they've got multiple companies. Audi?
It is Audi, but which car in particular? I'll give you 0.5 for Audi, but if you can give me the model.
Ooh.
Oh, I'm an idiot.
I'd be guessing. Scotty, do you know the model?
I'll give it to you, Scotty. Yeah, Scotty, I'll give you the 0.5 if you can give me the model.
RS3.
RS3 is correct, Scotty. Well done. It was the TTRS is no longer for sale because the TT is no longer for sale. So the only remaining car that a 5-cylinder engine is in is an RS3. Question four.
I go into the Audi dealership just between you and I can't tell them apart.
Yeah, they're
all grey. They're all grey. They've got about 14 shades of grey in the colour range.
They need a bright green, mean green Fiesta ST, and there's what they need.
Actually, funnily enough, there is a green, I think, now. Skoda. Have you seen the green Skodas? My goodness, that's retina-searing green.
Yeah. I think Audi's got the RS Q5 now, too, which you can get in that bright green. Question four. On a remote island near Chicago, Illinois, lies an abandoned car on an island that has been stranded for over 8 years. What type of car is it? I'll give you, if you can give me the make, I'll give you the points. It's been quite well documented that this car's just been sitting. It's kind of in folklore now that everyone just go, people go there to see it because it's just like, do you want to go see the car stuck on the island? So
I saw it on Instagram the other day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it's a Volvo S80.
It is a Volvo S80, David Prince. Well done. Bonus question. What is the island now called?
Is it obvious?
It's pretty obvious.
Is it Volvo Island?
It is Volvo Island. Well done. If you look up Volvo Island on maps, you'll see the car, and it's quite funny actually. I had to laugh. I was like, I couldn't believe that. That's legit, quite literally a thing.
What a world we live in, where a car stuck on an island becomes a tourist attraction.
Oh, it's insane.
Oh God, it's not even like really an island. It's
like a sandbank, really.
Pretty much. It probably got stranded. Just got stranded there. And now it's become part of folklore. Can you believe that?
I was picturing something bigger, like an actual proper island, but it's
just advertising, really, isn't it?
Like, that's it.
It's quite literally a Volvo on an island. It's the name Volvo Island.
Just fits the Volvo. That's it.
I actually quite like that. I think that's really clever. Question number five. This is a brochure question. What's seen? What's hidden? The shape, the sound, urgent curves of Australia's unique sports coupe are equalized by the increased muscle under the bonnet. Listening to 5.7 litres of high-output Generation 3 LS1 Plus V8 engine, now massaged to a mighty 260 kilowatts and 500 newton meters as it burbles through a true dual exhaust system. Purists earful. With ground-hugging stance, the new blank is as savage as it is sophisticated. What car am I talking about? Scott.
Is it the... It's got 260 kilowatts. I'm going to say it must be a HSV GTS.
Incorrect. I'll give you 0.5. You're right with Holden or HSV, but it was hot. It's more Holden. I'll give you 0.5.
Oh, is it? Okay. Dang.
For the other 0.5.
Okay. David Prince. Oh, any more clues?
Nope. That is the brochure.
Okay. It's not the Monaro CV8. No, CV8.
Yeah. It is the Monaro. So the Sports Coupe gave it away. Sports Coupe, 260 kilowatts. That is your Monaro. Question six. Which electronics company, until recently, has been selling cars unknown to most people around the world?
Yeah.
Big electronics company, guys. Arguably one of the biggest in the world.
Scott. Sony?
Incorrect. Good guess, though.
David, it's just a guess again. Samsung
is absolutely correct, David. They have been selling cars for over 20 years. Can you believe that? That is a pretty ridiculous thing. I'm sorry. I was yesterday years old when I found that out.
so they're obviously big in Korea.
Massive in Korea, but they're now not called that anymore. They're called, because they joined with Renault at one point, and now they're just called Renault Korean Motors, I believe. So they've dropped the Renault Samsung Korean moniker. Okay. But bonus question:
so they were badge Samsung, were they, in Korea?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Bonus question: what was their first car actually based on? I'll give you a hint. It's a sedan that we got offered here in Australia in the 90s.
Oh, I guess. Is it? Mm-hmm. Was it somehow Daewoo related?
Incorrect. Mm-hmm. Scotty, I'll give you a hint. It's Japanese.
Camry?
Incorrect. It was the Nissan Maxima was their first car. Oh, they kind of rebadged it and adjusted the fascias and stuff.
I'm guessing they don't have Apple CarPlay.
Yeah, no, I don't think they would. I like what you did there, David. What does the Vauxhall VX220, which is the kind of Lotus Elise sports car that was also known as the Opel Speedster, and the Holden Astra SRI 2.2 have in common?
Scott. The engine.
The engine is absolutely correct. 2.2 liters of Ecotec goodness. Question 8. How many series of the Lotus Elise have been made?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's been going for a while, hasn't it?
David, you can have a punt. You choose in first. 3 is absolutely correct, David. Well done. Question 9. Which Suzuki model has had a massive recall due to fuel pump issues?
Oh, I saw that today too. David.
I really got a record.
It'd be the Jimny.
The Jimny is correct. Question 10. Subaru has brought back a much-loved WAX model range. It auto-corrected. It's meant to be WRX model range. So they've brought back a much-loved WRX model that was previously used on cars here in Australia years ago. What is it called? So it's a trim that you can get from Subaru now. What level of trim is it called?
Ooh. Interx. I'll have a guess. Is it Club Sport?
It is, or not Club Sport. That is incorrect, David. Okay. I'll give you 0.5 for mentioning Club. Scotty, for the other point, it's on a plate for you, mate. Scott.
Is it? Oh, now I feel like I'm going to get it wrong, like I'm thinking of the wrong thing.
Okay, Scotty, it's not Club Sport. Okay, it's not Club Sport. There you go.
Yeah, is it the...
It's a similar spec to what it was.
Yes. Club something.
The club spec.
Well, like
club
done. Spec
team. Yeah.
That's it. Well done.
I was almost going to get wrong because I was thinking the they had the Evo versions.
They did. They did too. They did too.
And I was
too.
Going to say that. So.
That is the car quiz, gentlemen. Score check. Scotty on 2.5. David was on fire. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.5 to Mr. David Prince. Well done.
Too many idle hours, like just, you know.
I got to really start just having car news or something on my phone.
I know we better get some of his questions from now, that's for sure.
The drive is back and they're really releasing a lot of stuff. But I kind of want to go for our next boys trip to Volvo Island, just out of curiosity, you know. I think Volvo Island's a cool place. I'd love to know how it got there. Like there's things that it was put there, or it was, you know, just caught up in a flood or something, but the car seems to be completely intact, just sitting there. So, interesting. It'd be interesting to know.
Probably
you probably need a jump pack, but I reckon it'd start. Great Volvo publicity. Imagine if the head boss of Volvo, instead of getting hit by his own cars in braking, you know, situations, going over there and starting it, it'd be like, yeah, this works.
Yep.
Oh, that would be funny. Gentlemen, I think that's a podcast.
Definitely.
Thanks for coming on. I know it was a bit of a shorter show and just with us three tonight, but thanks for coming on the show, gents. Much appreciated.
Quality, not quantity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Scotty Doe, golf tip of the week.
Golf tip of the week. Oh, I haven't really looked up one. There was one that I was watching that I keep doing that I think I'm doing a mistake on, and it's a little bit more about the grip.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's about where you're gripping it, and you want to grip it more across this part of your fingers to grip around on it, other than having it running along. I think they call that the lifeline.
Yeah.
You don't want it running along there. You want it running along, gripping across the fingers there. So you have your club running horizontal, and then grip it that way, and then go down and hold the rest of it. You get more movement in the wrist, which helps with the power to hit it. So I want to give that a go.
Yeah. So are you saying, Scotty, run underneath your knuckles, like on the inner part of your hand? That's
yeah.
Kind of where you want to hold it. Okay.
Yep. And it'll help more with more control with the wrist movement and everything. So I haven't given that a go. I want to give it a go because I feel like when I'm picturing myself, I hold it and I think it's running along more on that lifeline other than where they're talking about. So I'll have to give that a whirl.
Absolutely. Love that tip. David Prince, you do a podcast.
Aside from this fabulous craft work that you do, Ed and I do one called Auto Retro, where we interview people and talk to them about the cars of their lives. And we've just finished recording the second series, so they'll be filtering out in the next weeks to come, thankfully.
Awesome.
Awesome.
It's exciting listening. Can't wait to hear the latest apps, guys. Like and share our Facebook page. It's Car Talk, T-O-R-Q. Manny J, if you missed any of our previous episodes, they're all up on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasting apps. So don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review to us there. Check out our merch. Go to our Teespring store. Go to teespring.com and type in Car Talk store. Buy some merch there to support us, or support us by becoming a patron to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Car Talk Podcast and support the show there. Gentlemen, honor as always. I will see you next week. Take it easy.
See you, mate.
See you.